With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Greetings, Grapple fans, and welcome to episode 100 of the Pro Wrestling Index, right here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. Yes, we have reached 100 episodes. CN, we have reached that fantastic number. But unlike CN Almas, we will not be buried on the pre-show. No, no, we're here for the main event, which means the three-man band is back together. So on air drums, it's Mo Chatra. On an air guitar, it's Guy Drinkle. Welcome along, gentlemen.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello. I think it was a sitar, wasn't it?
The air sitar.
I think that's what it was.
Trendy. For the purposes of podcast, of course, you dear listeners will not be able to see Guy doing his moves there, you know, playing all them chords.
Maybe two.
And more, smashing the cymbals as he goes through. So, guys, 100 episodes of the Pro Wrestling Index. And you know what? A big weekend of wrestling this past week. We had the NXT TakeOver Brooklyn Part 4. And, of course, SummerSlam. So much for us to get through. Two huge events of wrestling. And later on in the show, we will be looking back on those 100 episodes of PWI with the man who's been here from the very start, Mr. Mo Chatra. But to start things off, Mo, welcome back. We haven't had you on the show for a while. NXT TakeOver, on the whole, did you enjoy the show? Do you think it lived up to your expectations?
Oh, yes, it did. More than lived up to it, in fact. It was possibly the best NXT TakeOver event ever. And we've had some amazing TakeOver events over the last year to 16 months. They've really been on fire, churning out one great TakeOver after another. But this one, top to bottom as a main card, might have just been the most consistently great one to date. It was that good.
Wow, high praise indeed. And Guy, we spoke about this on the preview last week, how we expected it to be a great show just because it's TakeOver and they're always great. Same question to you then. Did you enjoy it? Did it live up to your expectations?
I mean, I'm not going to say it was horrendous. No, I mean, it's NXT. It's always perfect, and I don't know if it's the best one I've ever seen, because I think we pretty much say that after every TakeOver nowadays, don't we? So I'll just say it was brilliant.
Yeah, it's hard to match War Games as well, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But it was brilliant. It was brilliant, and obviously we'll get into the individual stuff, but there wasn't a low point, and there rarely is a low point, isn't there? The most disappointing thing is, actually, that I've just got it up on Wikipedia, and it spoiled the match for the NXT on TV, which is disappointing, but that's for another complaint.
We should, of course, mention to Our benefactor, Mr. Gags Tandon, if you're listening, this show will contain spoilers for NXT TakeOver and SummerSlam. So if you haven't watched them, then you're probably not going to enjoy listening to this podcast. So then,
Guy. Tune out now.
Yeah, tune out now, Gags. So, Guy, one of my favourite matches of the weekend, quite possibly my favourite match of the TakeOver event, was the tag team title match, Undisputed Era, overcoming Mustache Mountain. What were your thoughts on this one?
It was bloody fantastic. That's my thoughts on it. It was just everything you need in a tag team match. I mean, I think I mentioned on the preview, tag team matches have always been brilliant, but they haven't really reached that level that DIY and the Revival had. I think that's probably the closest it's been since that. And that's not saying all the other ones are bad. It's just that they didn't reach that pretty much show-stealing level. And I think this one really did get in that. And I mean, you could probably mention any match for Match of the Night, but you could easily make a case for this. And I said before we started recording, Tyler Bate is younger than me, and he's already doing that. I mean, if he's not... If WWE don't have plans for him to become one of the best people in their company for whatever, the next 20-odd years, they're doing something wrong. Because with at that age, with that level of talent, he should be the next face of the company, with someone we'll obviously mention later in Velveteen Dream, because them two being in the very, very early 20s, it's just special levels of talent. But on the tag team match, I mean, Undisputed Era. I know they've had the change from Bobby Fish to Roderick Strong, but nothing's changed. They're just still brilliant as a team. And Mustache Mountain, I wasn't aware of the previous one where Undisputed Era won it back when they threw in the towel before, but adding that bit of story element into it, it was brilliant. And I thought Mustache Mountain were going to do it for a bit there, but no, perfect. It was a perfect match for me.
Yeah, absolutely, with Tyler Bate, as I said last week, for his age, his talent and his ability to work is freakish. I love this. What about yourself? Did you feel that this was up there with some of the best that we've seen in terms of like Revival, DIY? Because I thought this was just tremendous. I loved the way that they worked so snugly. You know, they really laid it in. They amplified everything. It didn't feel like there was a low point in the match at all. If this was the closest thing to Strong Style, do you think that's fair? I mean, what were your thoughts on it?
Oh, it was immense. Absolutely immense. Tyler Bate and Trent Seven are just a fantastic pairing. They are underrated, in fact, because... there were others who were given a higher profile in NXT, albeit the pair obviously have held the NXT tag team titles in the last several months. But they are capable of so much in the ring, and they showed it really here in abundance. These are two impressive individuals, especially Tyler, as you say, for somebody so young. He started at only about 15 years of age. In fact, I'm seeing him just over a week's time as we record this. So he and Trent Seven, their home promotion is a promotion called Fight Club Pro, even based in Gag's country in Wolverhampton. So I'll be out there in that neck of the woods to see those two live. But they regularly churn out work of this caliber. This was one of the best NXT tag team matches ever. Wasn't the best NXT tag match I've seen. That would probably be that, I think, best of three falls match we saw between, was it DIY and Revival a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I think it was.
That was pretty special.
Yeah, so for me, that's still the best one ever, but this wasn't all that far off. This was an amazing start to the show, and the crowd on its feet from the start of the event, and that was just the perfect way to start the event.
And absolutely agree with you, by the way. And EC3 and Velveteen Dream, then, more I've said I think EC3 clearly has got the physique. He's got the look. He can talk. He's got all of that. I wasn't too sold on his in-ring work, but what about him and Velveteen? I mean, we know Velveteen is a star in the making. We've seen that already. Do you think their styles gelled well enough here? Whether, you know, was the chemistry quite right? Because this match for me was, you know, it was good. It delivered. It was perhaps slightly better than I had anticipated, but still not quite at the level of the other matches I thought that we had that night.
That's right. I mean, it was victim to two things, the quality of the other matches, but also the quality of Velveteen's previous takeover contest as well. You know, he's really set the bar very high for himself with some pretty amazing contests in his short NXT career thus far. So compared to some of those early matches, this wasn't as good, but still in its own right, a good match. But I think what it did show is that EC3 is clearly somebody who isn't of the level of worker of many of the talent that are on NXT at the moment. Now, he is a competent worker, did some fine work in TNA, but, you know, he's surrounded by people that are, you know, in many cases, several levels above him as workers. And, you know, he will certainly struggle to stand out when it comes to his in-ring work. So he has to compensate for that with personality and look. But with Velveteen, you know, he's got everything. You know, he's got the look, he's got the work. And, he, you know, given his lack of experience, you know, it's almost frightening to think how good he could be 4 or 5 years down the line. So by his high standards, it wasn't one of his better NXT outings, but you know, still, as I say, pretty good in its own right.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And Guy, you know, we talked about this last week. It did have potential. I did wonder what it was going to be like. As it turned out, it was slightly better than I expected. But what about yourself then? Do you feel that these two kind of meshed, or do you think this is like one and done? They've done this. These two kind of need to move on, and even the way that they were kind of positioned, you know, with Dream taking on the heel role that the fans though seem to love him and they get behind him, and EC3 playing the role of a babyface, yet his gimmick is more sort of heel like. Do you think that this is it then? What we've seen, it's time they move on to separate. Move on in separate paths?
I think so. I mean, when Moore was describing EC3 there about him being more personality and everything, for me, that just kind of screams that he's probably ready to be fast-tracked into the main roster more than anything, because you can get by with personality and a character, and he's not bad in the ring, is he? He's okay in the ring. So I think he could be one of these ones who's fast-tracked into the main roster, and then whether it's SmackDown or Raw, he could do a job on that, because he'd do a job up there. And I think he's more of that style, whereas on NXT it's all on your wrestling ability when it comes to the takeover, isn't it? It's sink or swim. So I think maybe not straight away, but I could see EC3 coming up in a couple months, maybe even WrestleMania. I mean, I know that's like eight months away, whatever. But I think EC3 will probably be in the main roster before Velveteen Dream is. But yeah, I think it will be one and done, because, as you said, the dynamics of the match just didn't really mesh that well, because Velveteen Dream's probably a better heel, but he's one of them ones that you just have to like, isn't it? Whereas EC3 is probably... He's kind of similar to what Bobby Roode was, wasn't it? You kind of like him, but he is just a cocky heel character.
What about them tights then? What about Dream's tights? Call me up, Vince. You know, wiggling, you know, across his backside, wiggling it to the camera. I mean,
it's brilliant, isn't it?
One of my favourite moments, I've got to say. I thought that was fantastic. I thought that was really smart.
There's two ways of looking at it. Either he's had that passed by Triple H and the higher ups, or he's kind of just turned up with that, and he's got probably the biggest cojones on NXT. So hopefully it's a bit of both, but no, I loved it. I loved it. It's perfect for the character, and even if he's like that off screen as well, just shows the confidence he has in himself. Because, as Mo said again, he's the complete package, and I think he is a homegrown WWE talent, isn't he? He's not from Indies or out like that, so I imagine.
He did very. Very limited amount of shows before he got into the system. So, I guess they'll look upon him as a homegrown talent, really.
Essentially. I think that'll work out well for him in terms of long-term perspective.
I think the sense of humour backstage will probably have quite appreciated it as well. But we're talking coolness. There's nobody cooler than Adam Cole. North American Championship match with Ricochet. Now, Guy, last week we talked about this as, you know, potentially being the match, you know, the match that steals the entire weekend. There were some sensational moments in it. I mean, there was that one in particular that you picked out, the super kick.
Yeah, we were talking before we recorded, and I said that's probably the best super kick spot ever, and then more reminded me of the Shawn Michaels Shelton Benjamin one, but I think this one tops it just because it's something I've never seen before. I mean, we've seen plenty of springboard super kick spots since that moment, but the moonsault super kick, good god. I mean, you have to be so good at that. I mean, he could have just took his head off. I mean, I think he caught him in the throat, but I think he must be all right. But good God, what a match that was. And I think, for me, this probably was match of the night because I'm not going to say the Ciampa Gargano thing's got stale, but I think this was just so fresh. And moments like that super kick thing, it's just completely new. And I loved it, and the fact that Ricochet won, it gives a new feud in well, it's not even mid card, is it? Is there really a mid card on NXT? It's just all brilliant. But it gives a new feud for Adam Cole, and well, we didn't mention it during the tag team thing, but the other half of Undisputed Era has got a new feud on their way, so it looks like Undisputed Era have got their matches for the next takeover, haven't they? So I think it looks set, and it looks like it'll be brilliant.
Yeah, it was more certainly. I mean, Adam Cole and Ricochet, I know you're a fan of Ricochet. You spoke very, very highly of him when he arrived. That spot they did with the super kick, I mean, that just spoke volumes to me of the timing and the precision of both guys to get that spot on. It's just such a risky spot, but to do it so well, it was incredible.
Oh, yes, it was, absolutely. And, you know, this is what I expect from Ricochet. And I'm glad in a way that they allowed him to go out there and work as freely as he did, because my worry with him coming into the WWE is that, like they've done with many independent talents, is restrict what you can and can't, what you can do, what you can't do. But certainly on the evidence of this contest, you know, you're certainly given free rein to work that very athletic style. I mean, as a flyer and as an athlete, there are very, very few in the business that can say that they're his equal. I mean, Will Ospreay is perhaps the only one that immediately comes to mind. There are one or two luchadors as well, like Ray Horace, but there really are very, very few. And, even the super kick spot aside, some of the other high flying maneuvers that he came out with were just absolutely insane. And he really, lit up this contest and was a star. And, you know, to do that against Adam Cole, who's no slouch when it comes to in-ring work, shows just what caliber of worker he is. So great all round. For me, every bit as good as the opening contest, which I thought was excellent. So as a start to the show, 2 out of 3 matches from the opening 3 contests, being absolutely amazing. It was just a heck of a start to the event.
It certainly was. And from there, the women's championship match, I've got to say, I think this match over-delivered for me, because I know, Omo, you've not been too much of a fan of Shayna Baszler's work since she's come up. She looked quite sort of limited. I think she's shown a development in this match particularly, and Kairi Sane I think she really displayed just how good a worker she is. And these two, the chemistry they had in this match, I thought it was great. And even the story that they were telling, it was this for me is just so many levels above anything I've seen from Shayna Baszler up to this point.
I agree again. Yeah, absolutely. On the basis of this match, she has really come on in leaps and bounds. We've got to give credit to Kairi as well. I mean, she is far more accomplished in the ring. For years and years, was the star performer for Stardom, which is one of the promotions out in Japan. And, is an immense talent. But Baszler, certainly when it comes to her in-ring work, this was right up there. I mean, the only match that comes to mind that was pretty much at that kind of level is the match she had last year against Tony Storm from Australia, I think it is, and who happens to be Tyler Bates' girlfriend, believe it or not. So Tony Storm is one of the great talents that we'll be seeing in the upcoming Mae Young Classic again, I think. And she'll certainly be part of NXT UK as well. But Baszler, as a champion, certainly came across very, very well. And, it was a heck of a match. And I really didn't expect it to be as good as it was. So, that certainly, of all of the matches, was perhaps the one that exceeded expectations the most and was the pleasant surprise of the night.
And Guy, what were your thoughts on this match then? Do you think this match turned out to be a lot better than what you expected? And perhaps you think maybe Shayna Baszler might even make that move up to the roster sooner than we thought?
It exceeded all my expectations. I think I've not hid from the fact that I've been a critic of her title run. I think her matches have just kind of been weird and very limited, especially the Ember Moon ones. But she has got better, and fair dues to her. I mean, that's what NXT is for. And I know some of the best workers in the company are in there, but ultimately it is the developmental show for some of the more greener talent. And there's definite improvement there. That's probably her best match that I've seen. I mean, I admittedly didn't watch the Mae Young Classic, as I said, in the preview. But hopefully it continues. But I imagine the rematch will probably be at the Evolution pay-per-view on it. So that'll probably be a big platform for the two of them. And hopefully they'll put on an even better match. But in terms of her main roster future, there is that natural star with Ronda Rousey and stuff like that, but maybe after Evolution you see that connection with Ronda Rousey somehow, and you can develop the story onto Survivor Series or whatever. And I think she'll definitely fit in on main roster character wise as well, because I think her character wise she fits in brilliant on NXT TV. But if the matches keep going up, she's going to be a hell of a coup for whichever program gets her on for TV. But yeah, good signs from her. And Kairi Sane, I've not really watched much of her either, but that very impressive. I think she elevated the match with her style and stuff like that. Again, her character's a bit weird, being a pirate and stuff like that. But if she's getting the platform she deserves of the Evolution thing, I mean, if she puts on a better performance than that, hell, goddamn, it's going to potential to steal the show on that one.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's all moving towards that Evolution pay-per-view. There's lots of good contributions potentially waiting in the wings. Final match of the night, Tommaso Ciampa defending the NXT Championship against Johnny Gargano. Guy had already mentioned how, it wasn't a case of this becoming stale, but enjoyed the fact that, Adam Cole and Ricochet felt so fresh. Do you think in some ways it was difficult for Gargano and Ciampa to even match the level that they attained in their previous two encounters?
Yes, it sort of was, really. Those earlier contests were possibly two of the three or four best NXT matches ever. And when you think about some of the matches we've seen on NXT over the last several years, that really is saying something. And I think that the stipulation of the match didn't help either. I think that that certainly hurt it in a way. But in saying all of that, I actually still had it as my match of the night. So I still thought it was an absolutely incredible contest. Not so much in terms of, you know, it having an amazing kind of closing stretch of fantastic near falls and submissions, because it wasn't that type of match. It was a last man, it was a last man standing contest, and that, you know, it had to be worked in a different way. But it was more about the storytelling in this one, and I thought that a lot of what they did was very, very clever, and you know, there was drama of a different type compared to what we saw in, you know, the two main earlier matches, previous takeover events. So, you know, I thought it was exceptional. There were people that found the finish to the match a little bit disappointing. I personally didn't. I thought it was, again, quite clever that, you know, he fell to his feet, and that, as a result, resulted in Ciampa retaining the belt. But, you know, I can understand why others felt, you know, it was a bit unsatisfying in the way that was done. And I like to now see them going different ways. I think that, you know, this was about as far as they can go and anymore, and it'll feel like it's outstayed its welcome. So it appears that that is the direction they'll be going in, and that's good to see.
And Guy, what about you then on that finish? Because as Moore mentioned, I thought it was fine. It made, in some ways, it kind of made sense for me, because it was that old school thing of, you know, the heel got lucky in how he managed to win rather than he was victorious. But there has been some controversy. There's been mixed reviews over that finish. What were your thoughts on it?
I enjoyed it. I mean, I think once it got, and he was handcuffed and stuff like that, you could kind of see it coming. That's probably the only criticism I'd give it, because he was obviously handcuffed right near the edge, and you could think, well, he's probably just going to roll off and stand up. That would probably be my only criticism, but from a storyline point of view, I really liked it. I can't remember who made the point, if I saw it on Twitter or it was in our group, that Gargano got so pissed off that he beat himself, kind of thing, and I quite like that. And as Mo said, it looks like the way they ended it with Gargano, whatever it is, kayfabe or whatever, dislocated his kneecap, I think they said on commentary or whatever. It's natural now that they go their separate ways, and whether they eventually come back for the WrestleMania takeover and have one last hurrah, and then one of them or both of them go up to the main card, so be it. But yeah, they definitely need to split from each other for a little bit at least, because I think we said on the preview, didn't we, it's a shame Aleister Black was injured, because I think they needed that extra dance partner to match the first two matches. And as I said previous, it didn't get stale, but I think you put it perfectly, it was never going to match the first two matches, because they're some of the best matches probably in WWE history, never mind NXT. So yeah, I really enjoyed the match, and I liked the ending, and there's a natural progression. I haven't watched NXT this week yet, so I'm not sure if they've developed the story at all, but it'll be interesting to see who goes against Ciampa next for the title, because I'm not sure. There's not too many faces in the main card on NXT.
Yeah, it would certainly be interesting to see what they're doing next. I mean, normally the first NXT TV show straight after a takeover event is basically just dark matches that were filmed on the day. So it's not really story time, it's storytelling TV. We get that next week, but it certainly will be interesting. And I do agree with you both. I think it is a natural progression now that they're both kind of somehow moving the different directions, and it will be intriguing as to quite how they handle it. But on the whole, you know, as you both said, you know, an excellent event, as we now have come to expect. These takeovers are just magnificent. 2.5 hours of pure wrestling pleasure. It was just superb. And you know, we said on the preview last week, Guy, that you'd almost be disappointed, or something would have to go wrong, or SummerSlam would have to do something incredibly spectacular to overshadow TakeOver, such as the way that the events have gone. Did you feel SummerSlam was overshadowed then, or do you think it stood out in its own right and was a damn good show?
I think it was overshadowed, but that doesn't mean SummerSlam was bad. Because I said afterwards, I think this is probably the best pay-per-view they've done since, for me, probably Survivor Series. For me personally, I know it used to, Ted, it was a bit indifferent, but I really enjoyed it. I mean, some of the finishes were a bit stupid, let's be honest. But I really enjoyed SummerSlam, just the fact NXT was special. But no, SummerSlam's one of my favourite pay-per-views in recent memory for me. We'll get to the dark points, but other than the horrendous crap matches on the pre-show, there was only one real bad spot for me.
Yeah, we'll quickly mention the pre-show shortly, but more yourself then. I was a bit mixed. I thought that it had some good stuff, but it had some disappointing stuff and a bit kind of in the middle. Overall, what were your thoughts on SummerSlam 2018? Good event or just somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, good, but certainly not great. Definitely not one of the best ever SummerSlams. Only one match of all 13 contests on the card was one that I would describe as a great match, a truly great match. And even then, it wasn't even as great as the three, possibly four best matches on NXT TakeOver. Which I'll come on to in a moment. But, overall...
Have you got to stop comparing NXT to the main roster, though? Because it's never going to win, is it? It's never going to win.
Well, you know, I think there has been one occasion from memory where a WWE pay-per-view, I can't remember which one it was actually better than TakeOver. But yeah, you're right. I mean, usually TakeOvers are better, usually comfortably better than the main roster pay-per-views that follow the next night. But even if we're not comparing to TakeOver, I mean, it was still, in my view, not a great show, because, you know, there were several very dubious kind of booking decisions, a bunch of matches which were not all that special. And, you know, it was a bit too up and down, and, you know, it felt very, very long at 6 hours.
Yeah, that is something I think that really hinders these big WWE main roster shows is just the fact that they're just far too long. I know they want to get so many people on there, and when we've got the pre-show, I just don't think it really helps having guys wrestle in front of, not even half empty stadiums at times. You know, some of them, you get the first match out there. Yeah, you've got a front row that looks pretty full on one side, but then the camera switches and you can see front row is absolutely empty on the other side of the ring. You know, behind the hard camera.
People come in as well.
Yeah, it is too damn long. The and it's a real shame for people who are on there. There's a bit of a that in itself, being on the pre-show, it hinders your career almost, how your perception of where you are. You know, the tag team quickly then the Raw tag teams, the titles are on the B team. You know, they defeated the Revival. I haven't watched the match because I knew the outcome, so I didn't want to watch it. I've got to say, look, Guy, I know you like the quirkiness sometimes.
Oh, no.
Comedy ones. You like to be different sometimes. They are annoying the hell out of me with this B-team thing. Are you behind them, or are you like me on the cynical side?
When I like quirkiness, I like Team Hell No, not the fucking B team. these are awful. Absolutely awful. And I watched the match. It was good until the end. It was okay. But that's because the Revival were running the match, and then the ending was disgusting. Basically, you had someone in a pin predicament, and then someone knocked someone else, and it knocked the pin to the other way, and whoever pinned whoever. But yeah, it was it was awful, and we said it on the preview, didn't we? That this is going two ways for the Revival: final nail in the coffin, or the start of the tag team division being brilliant again. And it was the final nail in the coffin. And now, Andy, I'm just praying that the authors of pain come in and steamroll everyone, because that's all I can hope for now. But that's not going to happen, because they're feuding with Titus fucking worldwide.
Yeah, that was such a great booking. Just briefly on this, then, more. I've got to say, for me, it's a particular disappointment. One, because I'm a fan of tag team wrestling. I'm an old school fan of tag team wrestling, and I think it has a great place on every roster, and NXT is perfect example of how it can complement a roster and a show. And there is so much talent within the tag team divisions across both shows, but Raw is really being hampered, I think, and such a solid team like the Revival, and then you, like Guy mentioned, you've got AOP there. I you know, throwing it to comedy, I think, is so counterproductive.
Well, it can be counterproductive, except I find nothing funny about the B team. There's just no redeeming features whatsoever. Their entrance music is a complete disaster.
God.
You know, it's possibly the worst entrance theme in the history of the company. I think the whole thing is just a rib, as they call it in the wrestling business. You know, just trolling the fans to say, okay, we're going to put the most annoying pairing out there and shove them down your throats and let's see how you like it. That has to be the sole reason for them getting this kind of push, and certainly getting the tag team titles. They should be nowhere near those belts. You know, they've damaged the credibility of the belts, and the belts, in fairness, haven't had a great deal of credibility in the last several years to begin with. But, you know, the sooner they just move on from this phase and try and treat that tag team division with a bit more respect, the better. And they've got the teams, as you say, to try and do that with, as you say, notably Revival and AOP. So they just need to move on from this, and hopefully this nightmare that we're going through with the tag team division won't last for much longer.
Yeah, hear, hear. And ha, 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 Vince, yes, we're all laughing. Can we please get back to the show now, please? kicking off the main card then, we will go into this one more because I particularly enjoyed this match. Seth Rollins with Dean Ambrose at his side, defeating Dolph Ziggler with Drew McIntyre, of course, at his side. I thoroughly enjoyed this match. One of many really good matches that these two have had.
Oh, yes, it was. Rollins, for me, this year, of talents on the main rosters, both Raw and SmackDown, has been the best worker. I think he's been consistently great this year, especially since WrestleMania, has been the best TV performer. And for me, this was actually the match of the night. I know that others had other matches as their matches of the night or match of the night, but this was the one for me. Built really well, had a really exciting closing final few minutes, and I thought it was the right result as well. It was the right time to put Rollins over for a singles title again, and you know, it was a really good finish, and you know, fans were up on their feet and really into it. So the perfect way again, just like the previous night, to kick off the main show.
And Guy, do you think Seth Rollins burned it down?
Yeah. Oh God. Not anymore.
Yeah, hey, I'll be singing before the end of the show, don't you worry.
I know, you're having a fucking beer as well. I think it was brilliant. I mean, I think WWE found this formula of putting Seth, if he's not obviously in a WWE title match, please. Oh God, I just remembered what happened on Raw. That's not happening for a while. Yeah, if Seth Rollins isn't in the main event, he's going to start every pay-per-view, because, as Mo said, he is he's the best thing in the company at the minute, and I know AJ Styles and that gets a lot of love, but Seth Rollins is just, he's the only reason Raw's been watchable for probably the best part of, like, a year. So yeah, I'll say top two matches, for me on the show. There's one later on, I imagine you can think which one it is. Was brilliant, and yeah, I agree. As soon as Dean Ambrose was coming back in, I thought there was only two things that could happen: Seth Rollins winning or Dean Ambrose costing him the match, and it was option A. So yes, I'm happy with Seth Rollins, and this feud's really rejuvenated Dolph Ziggler's career, hasn't it? I mean, putting him with Drew McIntyre helped, but having this feud really, really rejuvenated brilliantly, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with it's more of a trio thing with the Shield coming back together now, isn't it? But it'll be interesting to see what happens with Dolph and Drew.
Yeah, I think the other positive on this is Drew McIntyre has come out of this on a positive as well. It's really, I think it's helped get him over it. Sometimes, you know, the danger of just being, you know, the third wheel and all the rest of it. But I think he's come out of this very, very strong as well. So yeah, it's good way forward for all guys. And that's what you want, isn't it? Everyone coming out of a feud, the better for it. And everyone is coming out of this, the better for it. So, hey, you know, that's all we want to see. Unlike the next match, which, I don't ever want to see again, because I've seen it enough. And, I know we spoke about how stale this was, Guy, last week, and I've got to say, look, I hated this SmackDown Tag Team title match.
I kind of enjoyed it, but I think for what it was just near 10 minutes of just carnage, wasn't it? And I thought it was enjoyable, but yeah, it was a bit pointless, considering what happened on SmackDown as well. So yeah, I fully agree. Obviously, they probably will be fighting each other again, but I think it's a shame. I'll combine the SmackDown match as well, because I think it's a shame what's happened with the Bludgeon Brothers, because I think when they first came in, I think everyone was excited about what they'd do, because they were the perfect monster tag team, and they kind of reset the entire process and then just took the belts off them when they kind of got interesting again. And they've not really had a chance, because, as we keep saying, this feud with the New Day, I think they've fought them for like 3 pay-per-views in a row or something like that, and it's just really stupid and a bit crap. It was okay, but it was not special, and I think the Bludgeon Brothers tag team reign is going to go down no place in history, but I think it's a shame.
And more, I know we've already, you know, we've already spoke about the whole tag team division, the Raw side of it, and there's even more talent on the SmackDown side in terms of the different tag teams there. You know, what I hated about this personally was it was just 10 minutes of stuff. It just felt meaningless to me. It was just some stuff put on, you know, that they all did a few little spots here and there, and then we had the DQ finish, and I just hated it. It's hard to really sort of put it into anything else. I wasn't interested in it one little bit.
Yeah, I think the thing that affects it is the fact that New Day just feel incredibly stale now. They've done so much over the last, you know, how long has it been? 4 years or so. There's very little they can do now that will feel different and fresh. But I think looking beyond that, I thought as a standalone match, I tend to agree with Guy that I thought it was actually a pretty decent match, quite a good one, in fact, until the unsatisfying finish, obviously a DQ ending. And this was, you know, a common theme during this night, and this is part of the reason why I was a bit down on the show, because, you know, I thought it was building into something really quite good. And then we have this abrupt DQ finish. You know, SummerSlam is supposed to be the second biggest show of the year. And yeah, it felt like the DQ finish was being used to try and set up another match down the line, whether it's on SmackDown or at Hell in a Cell.
Oh, God, you know, I really don't need Sorry, sorry to cut across. I just really don't need to see these two fighting again. Not again.
Well, it looks like we possibly won't, because I think it's Eric Rowan that suffered a bicep tear in the last couple of days. So, yeah, we almost certainly...
Well, I told you Bray is going to be in the main event of Raw. I don't know where Luke Harper's going.
Yeah, so it looks like whether it was the plan or not, we probably won't be getting more of this feud continuing. But, yeah, it as a standalone match, and putting aside how stale certain people in the match certainly come across at this moment in time, I still felt it was a pretty decent match, just a very, very lousy finish.
Mm. What of the squash job on Kevin Owens then? Because... I just feel, why did we need to have this on a big pay-per-view, you know, less than 2 minutes? I really don't see what either guy really gets from this. It's, I found it a very, very odd decision and a poor way to book one of your leading talents, really.
Yeah, absolutely. It's bizarre what they're doing with Kevin Owens and what they have been doing with Kevin Owens going back for quite some time now. This isn't something that's new. This goes back to 2017, this kind of very strange booking of Owens. I mean, ever since, in fact, the feud with Jericho ended, they've booked him in a very inconsistent, incoherent way, and he has suffered as a result. And it's a real shame, because he is one of the elite talents in the company, and you know, he could be one of their biggest assets, and yet he's just being portrayed as a mid-card nobody, and you know, being squashed in less than 2 minutes on the second biggest show of the year, you know, does nothing really for his momentum and for his future prospects. And it's a shame, but I just find it very strange why this is going on. There must be something more to this than meets the eye. I'm just intrigued to know what it is.
Yeah, I have my suspicions. Watching that WWE 24 documentary with Kevin Owens, the 365, whatever it was called anyway, that's where my suspicions come from. Guy, you know, you had hopes that perhaps we might, you know, this was being propositioned as...
That fell long ago, Andy.
Yeah, that Kevin Owens was going to get the briefcase, and this was, you know, this was him, you know, the totally heel thing. It didn't look like he could do it. Then he somehow weasels his way to getting the briefcase and cashes in the same night. Yeah, didn't quite come out like that, did it?
No, it's... Yeah, as I said, this is my bad spot of the night, because I'll get harsh and real with this bit. This is a fucking joke. To be honest, Kevin Owens is probably one of my favourite people in the WWE at the minute, and, well, not in the minute, just in general, because he's been booked fucking horrendously. But yeah, it's such a goddamn shame, because he's elite level. And I do like Braun Strowman, but he's been built for so bloody long, and he can't. He doesn't even get to fucking pin Brock Lesnar, and he's just pinned one of the elite talents in under 2 minutes. What's the point? What's it building to if he wasn't going to beat Brock Lesnar?
Yeah, I that's a good point, actually. I think that they risk overcooking Braun Strowman in some way. You know, they keep building and building and building and building and building, but never pull the trigger.
What's going to happen when Roman Reigns beats him clean in the next fucking period?
Don't go there.
The thing is
as well, it's not just, oh, look, we're Kevin Owens fans and all the rest of that. It's, you know, this is a guy who's like Mo said as well, you know, this is an elite worker. He's a fantastic heel. He's superb on the microphone. You know, he's a great talent. And to book him and make him look so weak and so poor, it's strange from a business perspective. It's an odd way to do business. But We could go on about it all night, and there's still another 47 matches to get through on this card. Women's SmackDown Women's Championship, Charlotte, Becky and Carmella. Look, it's going to be difficult to have any kind of a great match with Carmella involved. I thought this was decent, but my favourite part, Guy, came actually after the match.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think on the prediction, I think we agreed that Becky was probably going to turn out. I thought it'd maybe be a bit later, but yeah, I think that was the right decision. Doing it in the moment, and I think you could see, well, they kind of delayed it, didn't they, whilst they had like a little heart to heart before she did it. But no, I think it was brilliantly done. The match itself, I think it was good considering it had Carmella, and I think that's the best way of putting it. But I think.
High praise indeed.
Yeah. I think, I can't remember, I'm pretty sure on SmackDown they said she's getting a rematch next week, which is a very good sign, unless she fucking wins. Good God. But if they get that crap out of the way, and then they can build this feud to what it should be and what the women's division should be about. Charlotte Flair versus Becky Lynch, who I knew she was popular, but either like a reaction on SummerSlam and during SmackDown, it was surprisingly good how it was. Because she's probably more popular than Charlotte. And I know Charlotte's probably more appreciated as a worker, but Becky was surprisingly over as a face for me. But no, I think it really works. I think Becky Lynch has been a face for all the time in SmackDown, hasn't she? And this is what the women's division needs. It needs two of the best workers having a feud over the title. And hopefully they get a bit of to and fro from it, really. Because other than Asuka, I don't see much else on SmackDown that deserves to be in the title picture.
And more, what about yourself on the match? I mean, the match was the match, but do you think it was that the time was right to pull the trigger on Becky turning, and did you like the execution?
Yeah, I think it was, but the reactions were interesting. That obviously the reaction was almost as if she was turning babyface on Charlotte, which obviously wasn't the intention, and perhaps it suggested that certainly that fan base isn't as keen on Charlotte as perhaps the rest of the WWE fan base. So when I talk about fan base, we're talking about this very hardcore audience that attends SummerSlam, Royal Rumble.
And New York as well, wasn't it? New York, yes, notorious crowd, yeah. As well, though.
That's right. So, we were proper bizarro world or bizarro land territory, as Vince used to call it. And, they always react in the opposite way. We're often reacting the opposite way to what the company wants. But it was good to see that there was a reaction, at least. I mean, the last thing you want is a turn to get an indifferent reaction. There was certainly not an indifferent reaction. It was a very strong reaction, but in favour of Becky. Nonetheless, let's not forget the fact that Charlotte became a women's champion once again. I think this is now a seventh reign, and the match itself, I thought, was good. And Carmella, all credit to her, has come on, again in leaps and bounds over the last 6 to 9 months. Go back certainly a year ago, nowhere near the worker that she is now. She's still far from the finish article, but certainly can hold her own now. So that's all credit to the effort and work that she's put into, her in-ring. And, Becky is somebody who I think could certainly make a good opponent for Charlotte over the next few weeks. But what's interesting, though, just going on a related aside, is rumours about the WWE Four Horsewomen, who are Charlotte, Becky, Sasha Banks and Bayley, having a Survivor Series match in 3 months against the MMA Horsewomen, who are Ronda Rousey, who's the Raw Women's Champion. Spoiler. also,
it's all right, Gags isn't listening by now.
the NXT Women's Champion in Shayna Baszler, and then their two friends, who we don't see on WWE television at the moment, Jessamyn Duke and
Marina Shafir. So 4 versus 4 for Survivor Series, what's rumoured, and yet that would seem unlikely at this stage, given Charlotte and Becky seem to be heading into a feud with one another. So, no, 3 months is still a long time, and you know they can have their feud and patch up and make up before Survivors, and that big horsewomen versus horsewomen match could still happen. I think this one might still go a while, and certainly through till the Evolution pay-per-view in October.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Yeah, it will certainly be interesting to see quite what they do. You alluded to it earlier on, some more Joe AJ Styles for the WWE Championship. I was really enjoying this match. Not too keen on the ending, but it has left me wanting more. Both Guy and myself were hoping for a title change just to kind of freshen up the scene there, and in some ways, perhaps AJ needing freshening up with that title change, and you know, being the babyface chasing heel champion could have been good for the show and for the title itself. But what were your thoughts on the match then?
Yeah, I thought it was building into something really special, and I thought it was well on its way to being the match of the night. But the finish was just quite a disappointing one. And you know, given that we had other endings to matches on this card, which were also disappointing, you know, by this point, I was just letting out a massive sigh and thinking, oh, God, not again. You know, Joe, I think, would have been absolutely fantastic had he won the title here. But again, it looks like they're using SummerSlam to set things up, rather than it be the event where you get the big payoff. And so it looks like we'll have to wait till Hell in a Cell, and possibly even after that, maybe the Super Show in Melbourne, to eventually see Joe pick up the belt. I think we will see him become the champion. I'd be very disappointed if he doesn't get the belt. I think he's very worthy as a title holder. He is clearly an exceptional in-ring worker, but I think he's got great personality, superb on promos. You know, certainly we're freshening things up for AJ as well. I think that his title reign, for me, is feeling a bit stale. And I think they've possibly got, you know, directions to go in with this whole angle they brought into this with Styles' wife as well. So interesting to see where that goes. But for me, it fell very slightly short of the opening contest between Rollins and Who did he face now?
Dolph Ziggler.
There we go. Ziggler, sorry. For me, that was very slightly ahead of AJ versus Joe. I thought, you know, had it led to a clean finish, Styles and Joe would definitely have been match of the night. But the abrupt DQ finish knocked it down a couple of pegs for me.
What about you then, Guy? Where do you feel this ranked on the night for you?
Yeah, this was my match of the night, because I think maybe Mo's a bit more of a wrestling purist than me, but I quite like the finish. I mean, I'd really love Joe as a champion, like probably the same amount as both of you. We all love him on this show, don't we? But I
did like what he said. Yeah. I do, you know, the line that he delivered, you know, I'll be your daddy now. You know, for that was brilliant. If it had led to a finish, you know, a clean finish in the ring some way, you know, for him to then escape with the title, I think it would, storyline wise, it just would have been perfect.
Yeah. But I really want to see them in the Hell in a Cell. and the still level of the personal level of this feud. I think it's the same as the Nakamura thing, wasn't it? Maybe they're just doing stuff in the wrong order. And I kind of agree that the big payoff should have been at SummerSlam, but I think the fact that Hell in a Cell is going to have, well, it's not official, but let's hope it has Samoa Joe versus AJ in a Hell in a Cell match. I think that's going to be brilliant, obviously. It is a shame that Joe didn't win at SummerSlam. But yeah, I really enjoyed this match, and I'm really enjoying this feud. But just to expand on it a bit, this has been two big feuds for AJ. Obviously, the Rusev one wasn't too big, but this is two big feuds in a row for AJ where the opposition's been carrying it, which I don't know if it's deliberate or not from the writers and stuff, but it's kind of a worry because it is making AJ a bit stale, because you had heel Nakamura running it, and now you've got Joe running it, so maybe I do think they really need to change the dynamics of it, and the only justification I think is if they really want AJ to break CM Punk's record, as I said on the preview, but that'd be stupid. But
it is
WWE though.
Yeah, I just see absolutely no value in AJ beating CM Punk's record. Well, if they say record, I mean CM Punk's number, because it's not even the record. Yeah.
Thing so, is, CM Punk's had Rock, like The Rock and everything, and loads of legends are towards the end. And you can't see that happening with SmackDown, can you? So it's going to have no, well, it was a disappointing payoff, but it's going to have no explosive payoff, is it?
Yeah, and more, you know, we're talking here about big shows, you know, traditionally being where you get the payoff. We certainly did get the payoff for Miz and Daniel Bryan. If I had to use one word to describe this match, it would be underwhelming.
Yeah, given the build-up, I agree with that. Certainly seemed that the crowd agreed with that as well. It lacked heat for the vast majority of the contest, which for a Daniel Bryan match is quite rare. And perhaps they're just not interested in Miz. You know, there's heel heat, and then there's I don't want to see you on my TV heat. And I think Miz has a bit of that, which for him is a bit of a shame because he works really hard. But, you know, he, again, is the victim of somebody who, a bit like EC3 in a way, does tend to end up in feuds and programs with people that are certainly in the ring more gifted than him. And, now, whilst The Miz is certainly far from a poor worker, you know, he isn't, you know, an elite level worker, and Daniel Bryan is, and people see that and appreciate that. And, you know, they would have been disappointed to see, you know, Daniel Bryan, you know, come off, on the losing end in this one because, you know, he made his big comeback, several months ago, and, you know, this should have been a big win. And, you know, what we then should have been seeing is Daniel Bryan moving on to potentially even moving into title reckoning, if not immediately, then certainly as and when Joe and Styles is done as a feud. So the fact that that isn't quite there yet would have been a bit disheartening for the fans. And, you know, again, it was a heel cheap finish, but it wasn't for me a particularly great one either. So, yeah, disappointing all round, really.
Yeah, and Guy, sorry, firstly, you mentioned that EC3. Interestingly enough, when we were talking about EC3 earlier in the show, The Miz was the kind of the name that that came to the forefront, that similar thing, you know, not the best worker, a decent worker, capable, but more about the, you know, the personality and the talking. And EC3, obviously the look as well. I don't think Miz has got the look, but certainly more about the personality and the talking, and not so much about the in-ring work. I think in triple threat matches, it's you know, Miz can hold his own. But one-on-one, I think he's kind of been shown up, it's a bit too much apparent. And I've got to say, in this as well, it kind of felt like this was the kind of finish you would have at perhaps the pay-per-view before SummerSlam. Mm. You know, and also not only that, but if you're going to do that kind of finish, it's got to be more obvious to those who are watching, rather than they've got to do replays and the commentators have got to explain what's happened, because then you've lost the actual effect of it. So for me, the finish, you know, didn't feel like a payoff at a big show. This was more of, we'd have done this the month before, it'd been more obvious, and then we get to SummerSlam, then we have Daniel Bryan, the nice feel-good moment, everyone enjoys it, the crowd are all behind it, and then they both move on. So what about yourself, though? Were you in similar sort of vein of thoughts to myself and Mo?
I'm not as disappointed with the finish, or I wasn't on the night, because I think obviously not match quality rise, but we kind of compared it to Ciampa and Gargano, didn't we? Obviously not as good, and it never was going to be as good. Whereas it could do a couple pay-per-views in a row, and then eventually maybe getting a mid-card title or main title somewhere down the line. But it was kind of disappointing, considering this probably had one, probably second best build after Joe and AJ, for me anyway. The match itself wasn't great. I do like Miz. I think he can. I think he's fine in singles matches. I think we've seen in feuds previous he can do fine. This one just didn't seem to. It just didn't seem to click, and it didn't have the quality the feud deserved, really. I wanted Miz to win because I thought it'd build into a more long term special feud, but the news broke on SmackDown that we're getting a mixed tag team match at Hell in a Cell, which is the most disappointing thing about this whole thing, because that's going to
be
absolutely awful.
It's going to be brutal.
And it's going to ruin both of them.
Brutal. Absolutely brutal. Yeah. Next, then, that took a minute and a half. The entrance alone was longer than the match. Finn Balor, Baron Corbin, best thing about this, for me, we got to see the Demon again. I did enjoy that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to see which one's shorter, the Finn Balor match or the KO match.
And Finn Balor one.
That's probably the surprise of the night for me. I agree. I thought the Demon was put on the shelf, because I don't think Vince. It's not a Vince thing for me. It just seemed a bit random, but no, I enjoyed it. I think it adds another character development, not even a development, redevelopment of Finn Balor's character, because as we said in the preview, he's stuck in absolute limbo at the minute. But it was good to see him get the main event of Raw, albeit he did lose to Roman in the WWE title match, it was a short under 2 minute match, but I think it had a good impact on Finn, and hopefully he gets the booking he deserves. Not as bad as KO, but them two have been really underutilized and pretty much crapped on for the best part of a year. So hopefully it's up for both of them, but you can really see an upturn for Finn Balor with the Demon coming back, because if he's got that in his locker, he always has a special moment in it.
It was nice to see the Demon entrance again, and obviously being in Brooklyn, they enjoyed it. Only surprise of the match that followed it, Shinsuke Nakamura and Jeff Hardy, was that that one actually lasted longer, because I thought they were going to go. Thought that was going to be a surefire short match with some way of Randy Orton being involved.
Yeah, it wasn't exciting at all. You know, it was just a match that, for me, almost couldn't care less about, which, you know, Addie said to me, I'd be watching Nakamura matches and not caring, you know, never mind a couple of years ago, or several years ago, or even a year ago. I wouldn't have believed you, but yeah, here we were, and I couldn't have cared less about the contest. It really didn't do anything. I thought it didn't get the crowd into it either. They seemed pretty dead for it. And, you know, the whole Orton stuff was just the icing on the cake. You know, yet another person that...
Your mate Randy.
People. Yeah. Another tired, you know, act that nobody cares about. So, you know, the whole segment was just a waste of space, a waste of time. And, you know, was a prime example of one of those types of matches that, you know, are just needless, meaningless filler on cards, you know, that are going 6 hours when they can all be done, pre-show included, in four.
Absolutely great. A guy we thought it might not last. Again, it was just what we expected, really, that everyone was distracted because this feud, this match really is more about the feud between Jeff Hardy and Randy Orton. So it's this match just suffered from it completely.
Yeah, I think the match alone wasn't that bad, to be honest. But yeah, it was just pointless. And the fact that Randy... I can't even remember if Randy Orton turned up. But no, it was kind of pointless. And I'm really surprised it wasn't a triple threat, because that could have had some interest, maybe up the length of the match, up the quality of the match. But hopefully Shinsuke goes on to more interesting things now, because I do like him as a character, but he's the Jeff Hardy feud started off all right, but the Randy Orton stuff kind of, well, just took away from the title, never mind Shinsuke, which is a bit stupid. And Jeff Hardy, he is what he is, isn't he? I don't want to say glorified stuntman, but he does love a big spot, doesn't he? But yeah, hopefully Jeff and Randy go on a better match, and Shinsuke can find an interesting feud.
Yeah, hopefully Jeff Hardy and Randy Orton have matches the nights that I'm not watching. Raw Women's Championship then. Ronda Rousey defeating Alexa Bliss. I know you like Alexa Bliss, Guy, long been a fan. I guess the title change, unless there was some kind of smoke and mirrors as we spoke about, what was expected, but the speed of Ronda is jaw-dropping.
Yeah, it was. I think we all expected Ronda to win. The only disappointing thing for me is that Steffi McMahon probably got more offense in against Ronda Rousey than Alexa Bliss did.
Yeah, but that's Steph.
Yeah.
We have to see Steph every so often.
Yeah, true. But Alexa Bliss has probably been one of the best women in the last 18 months, probably. And it is a shame it's ended in 4 minutes, but you do have to sell Ronda Rousey, I suppose. And she'll go on to bigger and more grandish things, won't she? Yeah, that's the only slight disappointment for me, is that Alexa Bliss looked extremely weak, but I mean, she is against probably one of the most scary women in the fucking world. but yeah, fair dues. That's the only question mark for me, but I can obviously understand why.
Yeah, and more, it was a brief match, so I know there wasn't an awful lot there for you to analyse, but like I said to Guy, I just find the speed in which Ronda executes her moves just incredible. Mind-blowing how she does things so quickly. She's transitioning so impressively, I feel, at the moment.
She is. I mean, you know, she's a world champion 4 months into her career, which is amazing, almost unprecedented. I think the only person that might better that is David Arquette winning the WCW world title, which I still have nightmares about. That was 18
years
ago.
Didn't Big Show win on his first night?
No,
whatever he was called.
I think he was about 18 months into his career before
was he
beat.
Oh, okay.
I think it was Ric Flair for his first WCW title. But no, she is a freak. And looked even more so with that makeup job. That really was quite an intimidating look. But Rousey, as you say, is just an amazing performer already. And I think she gets it from her judo background. I mean, that's a sport that does require you to be very explosive and very quick and sudden. And, you know, she displayed that in her MMA career. And, you know, she's now displaying her wrestling career as well. And you know, if she's this good only 4 months in, then, you know, just imagine what she'll be like 2 or 3 years into her career. This wasn't for me a particularly great contest or even a good one. It was like a longer drawn out squash match. You know, Alex, as you said, didn't get much in the way of offense in, and just spent a lot of the match just trying to run away from Ronda. But, you know, Ronda is a champion now. And, yeah, again, it will be interesting to see where they go with this. You know, who will beat her? You know, she beat, the dominant heel champion of the last year, 18 months, as if she was nothing. And yeah, it's looking like she might be in for a lengthy title reign now. So yeah, and that for me is fine. But as long as she doesn't drop the title to Stephanie, that is my main fear.
You've just gone and planted that thought in my head. Why did you have to do that?
That's going to be the WrestleMania main event, isn't it?
There we go. Spoiled it already.
Good God.
Now, you mentioned squash matches. I mean, when you think on the main card, there was 10 matches and 3 of them were squash matches. It's a bit of an odd feeler. And it's, you know, suggests again that mixed kind of booking that we've seen. But what of the main event then? Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar. Obviously, Braun Strowman turns up very early on. What did you make of this contest then, Morby? Because they kept it very short. Obviously, I guess, mindful of the fact that the fans have not been into this.
No, they haven't, no. But, you know, it was good to see Brock drop the belt at last. And finally, Raw has a full-time Universal Champion again. You know, in a way, it's a shame that they kind of killed off the whole Paul Heyman storyline from a couple of weeks ago on Raw, where it looked like Brock was turning on Paul. I think how they follow through with that, and maybe the reactions to Reigns on this night might have been a bit different. I mean, he didn't get quite as strongly a negative reaction as he normally gets, but it still wasn't a very positive one. And, you know, we still heard chants of "you both suck" during the match as well. You know, Lesnar is now going to head off and do his thing in the UFC. You know, it could be a while before we see him in the WWE again. We will do. Obviously, he signed another contract extension around WrestleMania time. But, with Reigns picking up the belt at last, you know, he really needs to prove himself in a way. You know, I think his many losses to Brock certainly hurt him. I don't think there's any getting away from that. And he needs to rebuild his momentum and, you know, come across as a credible champion. And that will be made very difficult by the fact that fans continue to reject him. And so he's stuck between a rock and a hard place. The Rock being the WWE Universe, as they are called, and the hard place being the stubbornness of the WWE booking. You know, they refuse to turn him heel, and the fans want him to become a heel. So in the meantime...
maybe they could get the Shield back together. That might get the crowd cheering.
Spoiler again. Oh, dear. that would be something... But that's the only thing that they've done in the last couple of years that's ever got him positive reactions. But it perhaps isn't sustainable, because then it means Rollins and Ambrose would almost have to play second field to Reigns. And, you know, certainly for Rollins at last, you know, in 2018, he started to get a bit of momentum behind him as a singles, you know, face performer. And he certainly lacked that in 2017. So, you know, if he's there to try and get Reigns to receive babyface reactions, then that would almost be a waste of Rollins in a way. But, you know, it might just be that, you know, the longer term direction with Reigns is to do something with one of Rollins or Ambrose or possibly even both. But, yeah, again, it'll be interesting to see where they go. But I'm just glad that Brock has dropped the belt. I think it was long overdue, and nice to see it finally go in a different direction.
Yeah, and Guy, do you think maybe they had Braun out there from the offset just to stop the fans crapping all over the match?
Possibly, but it soon changed, didn't it?
And obviously, yeah, they're still chanting, you know, you both suck. But yeah. I think that they had that distraction, didn't they? That Braun's there ringside, the fans are into Braun, and as they're thinking, well, we don't want to just
like the end boo of the
and walk out because, yeah, we think something might happen here.
It's like the end of the bullseye. Here's what you could have won.
It was Braun a speedboat.
Yeah, he is. Or a holiday to some random country that probably doesn't exist anymore. but yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. Braun was probably out there to probably quieten down the crowd a bit, because it wasn't as hostile as WrestleMania, but I don't think it never was going to be, because it's not. What, 90 odd thousand people is it? I'm not sure what the Barclays Center is. But it was never going to be as bad. Well, having said that, the Royal Rumble is probably one of the worst ones he's ever got, isn't it? But yeah, it's, I think they've got away with it in terms of the crowd reaction, because it could have been a lot worse than it was. As you've both pointed towards, and yeah, the main thing is that it's not Brock anymore, and we've got a champion now, and we've already had one defense on TV, and yeah, you brought up the Shield there. I think we all like the Shield, but as Mo said, we don't want Seth taking a backseat role. Ambrose has just came back, and it'd be interesting to see what his character's like. With his new look and stuff like that, but now he's going to have to be Shield Ambrose, and going to have to be Shield Rollins, and whatever the feud's going to be for Hell in a Cell. I mean, would the really... This isn't a Hell in a Cell preview, but I mean, there wasn't much to take away from the match other than the win, was there? But are they really going to go into Hell in a Cell with a Shield match rather than a Universal title match? I mean, it's a bit hypocritical. But yeah, it that's the main thing. We have a champion back on Raw every week, and albeit he's a contentious one, I like Reigns as a worker. I'm sure we all do, but his character, it's just I think we've all said this, and probably every wrestling pod said this. It's just Cena 2. It's John Cena Mark 2, and it's gonna get worse before it gets better. And yeah, happy days, and let's see what they do with the Shield. But I'm not. It's gonna be interesting to see what they do, because I think there's only 3 weeks till the next pay per view, so there's a lot of building to do on Raw especially.
Yeah, I think what you mentioned, you know, a Shield match would probably be the most likely, and as you both mentioned, you know, the best thing to take away from that main event is that we now have the Universal title on TV. And, yeah, we've moved on from Brock now, and it needed to be done. So, Mo, then, I mean, that's it. We've been through TakeOver. We've been through SummerSlam. You know, two big events, huge weekend. Some great matches in there, some not-so-great matches. And 100 episodes of the Pro Wrestling Index. Now, you've been here from the very beginning, so what's it like for you getting to 100?
Well, I didn't think we'd get this far, but no, it's fantastic, absolutely brilliant to have got to this great landmark. So for those geeks who check on the app, you might find that there's actually 102 episodes now that we put out, but two were not full episodes. They were just kind of part episodes, that weren't officially classed as episodes of this great podcast. So yeah, it's been a great ride. Obviously, I started with Matt Topolsky back in July of 2015. So even though he left us about 18 months, 2 years ago, he still was a great partner on the podcast. So certainly thank him for his contributions to the podcast and all he did for us in the early days. We had some guests on the podcast as well, including an ex WWE booker and an ex WWE commentator. So that was all thanks to Matt, and it was good to have those guests on. And obviously, for the last couple of years or so, it's been you and I, Matt, and more recently, Guy has been increasingly a part of the lineup. So, it continues to evolve. And, you know, one of the things that you perhaps will see less of is me appearing on all of the podcasts. We have got others who will certainly be looking to appear on PWI, and I'll still be appearing, but not on all the podcasts most of the podcasts like I had been in the past. But that's a good thing as well. It's always good to get different views and opinions.
Hollywood.
Yeah, it means I'm becoming a scene or a rock of Anfield Index. but without the multi-million pound
Cock Blockers 2 starring Mo Chatra.
And without Nikki Bella on my arm. Well, I actually know that that's no longer the case with John Cena. But it has been an amazing 3+ years. And here's the three more and plenty more besides. So, PWI has been going strong on Anfield Index. Very much part of the whole channel in terms of the setup, and needless to say, thanks to Gag for having the idea of putting this podcast together in the first place, and as I say, looking forward to keeping it going for several more years to come.
And if you had to pick out a moment in there, is there any particular one that stands out for you? And if it's not the one where I was singing, then I'd be very disappointed.
Well, actually, I wasn't on that podcast, so I listened to it. But it was Guy who got to experience
that
first time. But I don't know. There's been some great ones where we've had some great laughs along the way, and I won't mention the times I fell asleep on podcasts as well. So, for those listeners that aren't aware, we in the past we have sometimes recorded these very late, and I'm actually somebody who wakes up at 4 in the morning every day, and so by the time we get into late evening, it's normally been a very, very long day. Not that that's an excuse, but and I said I wouldn't mention it, and I have done, so more fool me. But we've had some great times on this podcast, and even today as well. And I'm sure you'll see us sat with a song as well, Mr. Wales.
Oh, I haven't prepared or thought of anything. That's I forgot my Elias guitar. Oh, that was a moment we forgot from SummerSlam. Elias snapping his guitar. Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. There, it was mentioned. That's as much as it gets.
You've ruined the podcast.
thank you for everything, obviously, that you've done with this podcast. And like you said, you might not be here for each and every episode going forward, but you're still going to be a part of it. A lot of the time, obviously, be myself and Guy. And as you did mention, Mo, there are going to be a few new voices joining us over the coming episodes. What we are hoping to do is to try and keep this podcast quite regular, as regular as we can, even if it means it just being a short podcast, because let's face it, sometimes there ain't that much happening in the world of WWE.
That's worthy to talk again.
Yeah. But all it leaves us to do is yes, as you said, look, thanks to Gags, obviously, for putting this together in the first place and providing the platform. But most of all, it's a huge thanks to each and every one of you out there who listen to this podcast. So without you fantastic people out there downloading and listening to that to this podcast, we wouldn't be here. So we do appreciate each and every one of you. So 100 episodes of PWI in the can. Here's to 100 more. And until the next time, from myself, Andy Wales, from Mo Chatra, from Guy Drinkle, and from everyone who's ever contributed here at the Pro Wrestling Index, it's bye-bye for now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.